to cover her hand with his own and said soothingly, "Aye, you do. Now remember not to force it. But did you recall anything else just now? Did you picture someone in your mind, or think of your uncle's name or anything?" Jetta frowned, but when he squeezed her hand gently, she relaxed her forehead and breathed out before saying,
"I got a quick impression of a small man. Not muscular or tall like you and your brothers. He was slender, and not much taller than me, and his head was balding."
She said slowly, and then shook her head and met his gaze.
"That is all."
"But that is good," he assured her, squeezing her hand again. "Every memory that comes back, no matter how small, is a good thing. It means the rest will most likely follow, does it not, Rory?" he asked, turning to his brother. Rory smiled and nodded, but Ollie could read his brother, and knew he didn't really think it was all that good. A frown tried to claim Ollie's mouth then, but not wanting to alert an alarm, Jetta, he forced it away with a smile and squeezed her hand again. "Come, you said you were starving. We should eat." The three of them began to eat, Rory and Jetta chatting and laughing as they did. But Ollie was quieter, his gaze slipping between Jetta and his brother as he worried about the man's expression when he'd asked him if her remembering was not good. It troubled him, and he wanted to ask him about it. So he was incredibly relieved when Jetta decided she'd had enough to eat and walked down to the surf. Watching her hitch up her plaid and wade into the water a ways until she could wash her hands, Ollie asked solemnly, "Is it not good that she is remembering?" "Of course any memory is good," Rory said solemnly. "But it troubles me that she's not getting full on memories, just bits and pieces. I should think her memory would be coming back on its own by now, if it ever truly will."
"You told her not to try to remember," Ollie pointed out with a frown. "And so have I, because you advised it. She has stopped trying to remember and is just letting whatever come, come."
I can," Rory said solemnly. "But I expected by not trying, she would relax and the memories would shake loose of their own accord. That does not appear to be happening."
"You want her to try, now," Ollie realized.
Rory nodded and then said quickly, "But only to see if trying still brings on the pain. If it does, she should stop at once. If not..."
"If not what?"
Ollie turned his head swiftly to see that Jetta had returned. She was smiling, her expression curious. While she'd obviously caught Rory's last couple of words, she hadn't heard much before them. If she had, he didn't think she'd be smiling.
"All cleaned up?"
he asked, getting to his feet.
"Aye. Mavis's pastries are lovely, but do get me all sticky,"
she said on a laugh, and then looked around as the sound of horse hooves caught her ear.
"Someone's approaching," Rory said, standing up next to them.
"Aye," Ollie murmured, his hand on his sword.
He watched tensely for a moment and then relaxed when a rider came into view, heading down the path they'd taken to the beach.
"'Tis young Simon."
"Who is that?"
Ollie heard Jetta ask Rory as he started toward where the path ended at the beach.
"One of the Buchanan soldiers," Rory answered. "Rest here. We will see what it is about."
Ollie glanced around in time to see Jetta nod solemnly and settle on the plaid to wait patiently.
"What do you think is about?"
Rory asked, moving up beside him.
"I'm no sure," Ollie admitted. "Trouble, probably. But there is only one man, so hopefully it's not too terribly serious trouble."
"Hopefully," Rory agreed dryly, and then fell silent until the rider had reached them.
"M'laird!"
Simon said in greeting as he reined in. I went to the lodge and Mather said you were here.
Eh? Ollie responded. What's amiss, Simon?
Your uncle sent me to fetch Rory,
Simon said almost apologetically.
Young Kitty was shot with an arrow and needs tending.
Kitty, the maid? Ollie asked with surprise.
Aye, Simon said grimly. I'll fetch my horse, Rory said at once and turned to hurry back to where their horses waited.
What happened? Ollie asked. How did a maid take an arrow? Was it an accident in the practice yard?
Simon shook his head. From what I understand, she was out collecting fresh lavender to mix in with the rushes. Laird Geordie came across her on his return to Buchanan from that task you sent he and Conran on, and offered her a ride to the keep. She was seated behind him on the horse and was hit in the back.
Ollie frowned. He knew Geordie had been frolicking with the lass of late and would be upset at this turn of events. Who shot her? He asked. Was it a hunting arrow gone astray, or...
I dinna ken, my laird,
Simon admitted unhappily.
I'm sure your uncle is looking into that, but as soon as Katie was brought in, he sent me to fetch Rory.
Ollie nodded and turned a glance at his brother as Rory leapt on his horse and rode him quickly back to them.
All set?
Aye. Fortunately, I brought my medicinals with me today just in case the outing was too much for Jetta, Rory said, patting the bag hanging from his saddle.
He glanced toward the beach then and said, Mayhap ye and Jetta should return with me. Simon could go fetch Mavis and follow us. Ollie seriously considered doing that, but then shook his head.
We would just slow you down. Besides, the lass has no clothes to wear.
Oh, aye, Rory said, but instead of leaving, just sat there, frowning.
I promise she is safe with me, Ollie said solemnly. I will no take advantage of her while you're gone.
Sighing, Rory nodded and waited as Simon urged his horse to walk around Ollie and return to the path heading back the way he'd come.
Send for me if Jetta has a setback, or you need me.
Aye, safe journey,
Ollie murmured and watched his brother follow Simon up the trail. Once the two men were out of sight, he returned to Jetta. Much to his surprise, she was already packing away the food. By the time he reached her, she'd finished with that and moved on to gathering the plaid Rory had laid out for them to sit on for their picnic.
We need not leave right away, if you wish a walk or something, he said mildly as he reached her.
Jetta paused and peered at him with surprise.
I assumed something was wrong at Buchanan, and you were needed.
Ollie shook his head.
Rory is the one who was needed. One of the maids took a stray arrow in the back while outside the gates. Uncle Akir sent for Rory to tend her.
Oh, the poor thing,
Jetta said with a frown as she began to fold the plaid.
Arrows can be so difficult to remove. Pulling them back out the way they went in can do more damage than the initial injury. I found 'tis often better to snap off the end with the fletching and push the arrow through and out, if possible. But if 'tis in her back...
She shook her head.
You can kill them trying to save them.
Ollie raised an eyebrow as he watched her fold the plaid in half and then in half again.
So you've tended many arrow wounds?
Aye, well, my mother taught my sister and me all she knew about healing ere she died, and...
Jetta paused and blinked in surprise. The plaid held in her hand folded into a fourth of its original size. Eyes wide with wonder, she whispered.
I have a sister.
Do you remember her name?
Ollie asked.
I...
She narrowed her gaze in concentration as she tried to recall.
If trying to remember causes you pain, stop at once, he said with concern. I just hoped mayhap you'd remember her name as you thought on her and your mother.
Nay,
she said on a sigh, but then brightened and smiled at him.
But you know her name and can tell me.
Ollie froze briefly, but then made himself relax and shook his head.
You can, Rory thought it best if you remember things on your own.
Oh, aye,
Jetta said on a sigh, and then argued,
but I do remember I have a sister. You would only be telling me her actual name.
Ollie looked away and struggled briefly with his conscience. He couldn't tell Jetta her sister's name. He didn't know it, and that's what he was struggling with. He wanted to be honest with her and tell her that he didn't know. Yet he didn't want to tell her that, and not just because Rory thought it better she not be distressed. He also didn't want to tell her because then he would have to admit they were not married. And the moment he did, he feared she would wish to leave him. And he didn't want to lose her. Taking the folded blanket from her, Ollie Benton picked up the basket with the remains of their meal and murmured,
we should return to the lodge.
Jetta looked disappointed, but nodded solemnly.
The sun has gone anyway. It looks like a storm is coming.
Ollie glanced skyward to see that she was right. Storm clouds were rolling across the sky, quickly blocking out the sunlight. The day was growing chilly, and by his estimation they'd be lucky to make it off the beach before the clouds opened up and dropped rain on them. Laying the plaid on the basket, Ollie carried it in one hand and with his other hand took Jetta's arm and walked her as swiftly as he dared to his horse. He would have liked to move it a jog or even a run, but walking through the shifting sands was hard work, and the lass was just fresh from her sick bed. He wasn't terribly surprised when the rain started just as they reached his mount. Ollie was surprised, however, at how hard the downpour was. Cursing, he reached for the plaid he'd set on top of the basket and then glanced around with dismay when he saw that it was missing. Spotting it back where they'd started, he realized it must have fallen off the basket the moment they'd started to walk. He almost retrieved it, but then just left it. He'd hoped to drape it over Jetta to keep her as dry as possible, but by the time he got to the plaid and back, she'd no doubt be drenched through anyway. So he left it where it lay and simply handed her the basket so that he could mount. Ollie then leaned down to catch Jetta under the arms and lifted her up before him, basket and all. The ride back was made much faster than the ride out had been, probably faster than it should have been, even. Ollie knew that he should ride with more care. A horse could lose its footing in such a storm, but Jetta had been sick for so long and was still weak enough that he was concerned getting caught out like this might set back her healing. He wanted desperately to get her back to the lodge, out of her wet clothes and in front of a nice fire as quickly as he could. He did his best to shelter Jetta with his body as they rode, but it was a futile effort and they were both soaked through by the time he reined in his mount in front of the lodge. Scooping her up into his arms, Ollie dropped off his mount and then carried her to the door of the lodge. Fortunately, she had the presence of mind to reach out and open it for him, since his hands were full. He was able to carry her straight in. Setting her down, Ollie glanced around the main floor with a scowl. Not seeing Mavis anywhere around and not wishing Jetta to try and take the stairs on her own, he suggested she warm herself by the cooking stove and then hurried back out to tend to his horse. The beast was huffing and stamping his feet in the pouring rain, obviously not happy at being stuck in it. He followed eagerly when Ollie caught his reins and jogged to the small stables. Both of them were relieved to be out of the storm once in the small building. As worried as he was about Jetta, Ollie did not neglect his mount. He took the time to remove his saddle and dry the beast down before putting him in his stall. Moving to the stable doors, then, Ollie opened one and paused briefly in surprise when he saw that the storm had moved on. Thunder was still vibrating overhead and he could see shafts of lightning in the distance. But the rain itself had died or now continued elsewhere. Releasing a relieved breath, he stepped outside and closed the stable doors, then headed for the lodge.
Ollie was halfway across the clearing to the lodge when the sight of Mavis coming out of the woods with a basket over her arm made him slow. She was a bit damp, but not soaking, so he supposed she must have found shelter from the worst of the storm. Ollie waited for her and nodded in greeting when she glanced up and noticed him.
"You're back, my laird,"
she said solemnly as she approached.
"Got caught in the storm, I see."
"Hey, it hit just as we started back," he admitted.
Mavis nodded.
"Fortunately, I was on my way back and near a large old oak when the storm started. It kept the worst of the rain off me,"
she told him and then gestured to the basket she carried.
"I went to see if I could find some eggs for lunch,"
she explained, drawing his gaze to the eggs nestled in the basket she carried.
"I happened on a quail's nest and thought I'd make some pappins for the lass. And then I found several more nests, so there's enough for all of us."
Despite having just eaten, Ollie smiled faintly at the thought of poached eggs in a golden sauce.
"I take it Simon found you,"
she commented, regaining his attention.
"Aye. He said you told him where to find us."
Mavis nodded.
"He arrived just as I was leaving to look for eggs. I refused to tell him where you were at first. Did not want him to ruin the lass's first excursion out of the lodge. But when he told me what had happened, I kenned I had to send him your way. Did Rory leave with him?"
"Aye," Ollie murmured. "Simon arrived just after we finished breaking our fast, and Rory left right away with him."
Mavis nodded and then sighed wearily as she led the way to the lodge door.
"'Tis a terrible thing about young Katie."
"Aye,"
he agreed solemnly, following her inside and pulling the door closed behind them.
"Is the lass back in her room?"
Mavis asked, glancing around as she crossed to the cook stove.
"She must be,"
Holly murmured, noting that the main floor was empty. He glanced toward the upper landing and saw that the door to their room was closed.
"Did she get as wet as ye are?"
Mavis asked with a narrowing gaze.
"Unfortunately, aye," Holly admitted, not happy at the fact. "I told her to warm herself by the cook stove, but..."
"She probably wanted to get out of her wet clothes quick as she could,"
Mavis said, bringing him to a halt. Ollie had been heading for the stairs intending to check on her, but paused at that, quite sure walking in on her naked would not aid him in keeping his promise to his brother.
"I'll just set these aside for now and go check on the lass ere I cook him. She may want a bath to warm her up after her soaking,"
Mavis said, placing the basket on the table. She turned towards the stairs and then paused and shook her head, sadly.
"Poor wee Katie. Such a pretty lass with all that long black hair, and such a sweet girl too. Hard to believe that anyone would want her dead."
"I'm sure it was an accident," Ollie said, surprised that she'd think otherwise. "A stray arrow from a hunter."
Mavis turned to peer at him with amazement.
"A stray arrow from a hunter? She was shot just as they reached the drawbridge. What hunting would anyone be doing there?"
Ollie stiffened at the news.
"The drawbridge?"
"Aye, that's what young Simon said,"
she announced firmly.
"And whoever shot could not be aiming at young Geordie, either, unless they thought to shoot right through young Katie and into him. She was hit mid-back and straight on," Simon said.
Mavis shook her head again and started up the stairs, muttering,
"Nay, someone has it in for our Katie. Someone who kens their way around a bow and arrow, too. Lord help us. I dinna ken what the world is coming to when sweet young lasses like Katie are."
Ollie didn't catch the rest. The woman had continued up the stairs as she spoke, her voice fading with each step. Frowning, he turned and moved to peer out the window. thinking that if what Mavis said was true, then Kitty's getting shot was attempted murder. And as Laird, he should be looking into it right that moment. He should be finding the culprit and seeing them punished. The safety of the people of Buchanan was his responsibility, and he should be on his way back right that minute. Not loafing about the lodge, trying not to make love to a woman who thought she was his wife but wasn't. Hands clenched into fists, Ollie whirled from the window and hurried upstairs, arranging things in his mind as he went. He couldn't take Jetta with him. She had no clothes. But he wouldn't leave her alone out here either. He'd leave Mavis with her for now, but he'd also send his uncle and half a dozen soldiers to guard them both until he could return. Or until he could find some damn dresses for the lass and bring her to join him at Buchanan. And he'd be quick about finding the culprit behind shooting Katie with the arrow. It shouldn't be that hard. As he recalled, she was a sweet young girl. In fact, the only motive he could think of for anyone wishing her harm was jealousy, either of her beauty or of the attention Geordie showed her. His brother had proven himself quite taken with the lass these last couple months. In fact, he wouldn't be surprised if Geordie told him he wished to marry the girl. Ollie frowned at the thought as he stepped off the stairs and started along the landing. He wasn't sure what he would do if and when that time finally came. Geordie was a nobleman, son of a baron, and Katie was the bastard daughter of a kitchen maid. That kind of union simply wasn't considered acceptable as a rule. At least not by most. The idea didn't bother him, though. But he did have to consider Geordie's future and how others would accept such a union. Pondering that as he reached the bedroom door, Ollie opened it, strode inside, and then came to an abrupt halt as he recalled why he'd been waiting below in the first place. Because Mavis was helping Jetta change. They weren't done with that task. Jetta was standing completely naked by the bed. The shift and plaid she'd been wearing were a soggy heap on the floor at her feet, and Mavis was approaching with a clean, dry shift for her to don. For one moment, Ollie let his gaze travel over all that beautiful, naked flesh. He noted that she'd filled out a bit this last week and a half since she'd woken up, and that the bruises that had still been a faded, nasty yellow when last he'd seen them were now completely gone. And then his gaze lifted to her face and he saw that she had spotted him, and was staring at him wide-eyed and obviously embarrassed. Jetta wasn't trying to cover herself, though, he noted. And why should she? She thought him her husband with every right to look on her naked, he realized.
I have to go, he said finally.
Och, my laird,
Mavis said with surprise. She peered at him wide-eyed and then glanced from him to Jetta and back, and simply dropped the shift over the lass's head and helped her get her arms through the armholes. The maid then turned to him and asked politely,
"Ye were saying?"
"I have to go,"
Ollie repeated, still staring at Jetta. In his mind he could still see her standing there gloriously nude.
"And where are you going, my laird?"
Mavis asked patiently. Ollie finally shifted his gaze to the maid. Only then was he able to regather his thoughts. Giving his head a shake, he cleared his throat and said,
"I am returning to Buchanan to look into this matter with Katie, but I'll send Uncle Akir and some soldiers back to guard you until I return."
Risking a look at Jetta, he noted her upset and sighed.
"I'm sorry, lass. I'd take you with me, but we have no clothes for you yet. I'll see to that too while I'm there and bring you back some pretty dresses to wear so you're no stuck here."
He watched several emotions cross her face. Upset, worry, even fear and disappointment. But then she schooled her features into a calm expression, straightened her shoulders and nodded.
"Very well, husband. Safe travels."
Holly nodded and turned to the door, but then hesitated. It simply didn't feel right leaving her like this. Whirling back, he crossed the room and bent, intending to press a quick kiss to her forehead. She, however, tipped her head up at the last moment and his kiss landed on her mouth. The moment his lips met hers, Ollie gave up the idea of a quick kiss and instead claimed her mouth properly. Jetta needed no coaxing. Her mouth opened at once on a little sigh, and when he felt her hands creep around his neck, he slid his own around her waist and pulled her close, then let his hands glide down her body until they cupped her bottom. Squeezing, Ollie lifted her slightly and straightened a bit, the action rubbing her groin against his, and then he eased her back to the floor and reluctantly broke their kiss.
"I have to go," he murmured again. "The safety of my people is my responsibility."
"Aye," she whispered solemnly. "Be safe, husband."
"And you, wife. Stay safe until I return,"
he ordered huskily. And then, ignoring Mavis's raised eyebrows, he turned and strode quickly from the room before he changed his mind and took her to his bed instead. The woman was like some kind of madness in his blood. He walked around wanting her all the time. These last days of refusing to allow himself to touch her had been an agony. He really needed to find out who she was and set things to rights there. If he didn't soon do that, he feared that despite his promises to Rory, he would end up bedding the lass and trapping her into having to marry him. And don't think that the idea didn't hold a hell of a lot of appeal to him. Having Jetta in his life, always. A warm, welcoming wife who seemed blind to his scars and greeted him with eagerness. The only problem was, he suspected all of that would disappear did she learn they weren't really married. He suspected she was just making the best of the situation she found herself in, and if she learned they weren't married, and she could leave, she would. It was what Adira had done. Betrothed since birth, they'd grown up as neighbors, always knowing they would someday marry. They'd both been perfectly happy with it. They'd even loved each other, or so she'd said and he'd believed. But when he'd returned home scarred from battle, she'd taken one look at his ruined face and screamed in horror, and then she claimed him more monster than man and refused to marry him. When her father had tried to force the marriage, announcing that it would go on as planned, she'd threatened to kill herself or flee to take the veil. Much to Ollie's relief, her father had relented then and broken the contract. By that point, he'd had no interest in marrying the woman himself. She wasn't, after all, the woman he'd thought her to be, and he didn't want a wife who saw him as a monster. Even so, he would have married her to fulfill the contract if the father hadn't broken it. His honor would have demanded it. Striding outside, Ollie walked to the small stable they'd built at the edge of the clearing to fetch and saddle his mount. He then led the beast out into the yard. His gaze slid to the bedroom window as he mounted. Spotting Jetta in the window, watching him as he settled in his saddle, he paused briefly and peered back at her for a moment. But then he raised his hand in a wave, turned his mount and headed off. It was surprisingly wrenching to leave her. He'd pulled her from the water more than 4 weeks ago, but she hadn't been awake for more than 12 days. And yet he felt as if she'd been a part of his life for much longer. In fact, it was hard to recall his life before her arrival in it. Ollie didn't know how that had happened, but he needed to do something about it. He needed to toughen his heart against her. Else he wouldn't survive when she finally left him. Chapter 6.
"There, now, he's gone,"
Mavis said gently as they watched Ollie disappear into the trees.
Come sit yourself down and let me dry your hair by the fire, lass. Then you can come below with me and I'll make you some lovely pappins for the nooning.
We just broke our fast.
Jetta protested with amusement as she allowed Mavis to urge her away from the window.
Aye, but by the time I get your hair dry and make the pappins, 'twill be the nooning.
The old servant assured her as she positioned her before the fire. Leaving her there, Mavis moved off to drag over one of the chairs from the table. Jetta settled obediently in the chair and then closed her eyes as the woman set to work. First, Mavis used a fresh linen to soak up the worst of the water from her hair, and then she tossed that aside and set to work, brushing the still damp strands. She used long, repetitive strokes, drawing the brush through Jetta's hair and lifting the damp tresses away from her scalp and neck so that the strands rose with the brush and then dropped to lay flat again, the action helping to dry it. It was oddly soothing, and Jetta nearly fell asleep in her chair before Mavis decided her hair was dry enough.
There we are. That should do,
Mavis announced, setting the brush aside. She turned back to survey her then and frowned slightly.
You look a bit tired, lass. Did you still want to come below with me, or would you rather nap?
Oh, nay, no nap.
Jetta stood at once and tried to look more alert, as she assured her.
I shall come below.
It would be her second time out of the room since waking, and both in the same day. It wasn't something she wanted to give up on. Just the thought of it brightened her mood considerably.
Very well. You can sit at the table and keep me company while I cook,
Mavis said brightly as she led her to the door.
And I'll tell you all about wee Katie while I cook.
The girl who was shot with the arrow?
Jetta asked. The maid had mentioned it as she'd helped her undress before Ollie had arrived.
Aye, poor wee lass,
Mavis said with a shake of the head as they started up the hall.
You remind me a bit of her, actually. She's tiny and has long black hair, too. Of course, she has it all over, whereas Rory had to shave the back of your head. Still, otherwise, the two of ye are quite alike.
Grimacing, Jetta raised a hand self-consciously to the back of her head. Catching the action, Mavis clucked her tongue.
Och, now, dinna fret. It'll grow back quick enough. Besides, it obviously does not bother the laird. Just look at how he sticks close and rarely leaves your side. Why, I've never seen the man so happy. At least not since that Stuart bitch broke his heart.
Jetta's eyes widened in surprise at the curse, and she asked,
The Stuart bitch,
Mavis said helpfully as they started down the stairs, and then shook her head with disgust.
I do not often curse. And I do dislike calling another woman such a name, but that lass is one deserving of it. She was a piece of work, that one. I was no at all surprised when she refused to marry our Ollie after he was scarred.
She refused to marry him because of the scar?
Jetta asked with outrage.
Aye, and no kindly. Said he was a monster, she did, and that she'd rather die than have to look at his face all the rest of her days. And him still in his sick bed, barely alive when she did it, too.
She added grimly.
Bitch.
Jetta breathed, horrified that anyone could be so cruel to such a kind man.
There now, I told you, didn't I?
Mavis said with satisfaction.
Aye, Adira Stuart was a true bitch. She had most of the nobles fooled, thinking her sweet and kind, but not me or any other servant she encountered. Adira was as sweet as honey on the tongue to all the men and any noble lady about. But get her alone in a room with a servant, and she showed her true colours quick enough.
She was unkind to the servants?
Jetta asked with a scowl. Her mother had taught her that one should always be kind to servants. She'd taught her to be kind to everyone, but especially peasants and servants. She'd said that their lives were hard, their days long and full of back-breaking labour, and they should be shown every kindness by those they worked so hard for. Of course, her father had never... Jetta stopped walking abruptly as she suddenly realized she was remembering something. Of course, the moment she realized she was remembering something, the thoughts in her head dried up like a puddle under a hot sun.
"What is it, lass? Are you all right?"
Mavis asked with concern. "Aye." Jetta sighed and then forced a smile and continued down the stairs with her as she admitted.
"Your words just made me remember something my mother once said." "You got a memory back?"
Mavis asked, obviously happy for her at the thought.
"Aye, a small one,"
she admitted, smiling faintly. And then, squeezing the maid's hand, she suggested,
"Mayhap, if you keep talking, I'll remember more."
"Och, well then, I'll talk till I'm blue in the face, my lady, that I will,"
she assured her cheerfully as they reached the bottom of the stairs and stepped off. Ushering her to a large wooden table with benches on either side, she said,
"Now, you just sit yourself down and I'll tell you all about the nasty cow what broke our laird's heart."
Nodding, Jetta settled at the table to watch as Mavis started puttering about. After a moment, though, she paused and lifted her head to sniff the air with a small frown.
"Is something burning?"
Mavis stilled at the question, her own nose rising and beginning to twitch. And then her head turned sharply toward the fire, and she rushed to it with an alarmed cry.
"Missed you!"
Standing, Jetta followed and peered over the woman's shoulder as she cursed under her breath and began to poke at the stew over the fire with a wooden spoon.
"I suspected Rory had no remembered the water, and I did plan to check on it,"
she muttered with irritation.
"That lad is always forgetting to do what I ask him. You'd think a lad as great as that could hold on to a thought for more than a minute."
Clucking, she added on a sigh,
"But then mayhap he has too many thoughts in his head to hold on to a one."
Shaking her head, she muttered,
"I ken I should have checked it, and I did plan to, but he said he had added the water, and then what with Simon arriving and me heading out to find eggs, and then the storm, I plumb forgot."
Tisking with irritation, she set the spoon aside and moved off to grab a bit of cloth to protect her hands as she lifted the pot off the hook over the fire.
"Get the door for me, please, lass."
Hurrying ahead of her, Jetta opened the door so Mavis could carry the pot out. But as the woman passed, she suggested,
"Mayhap it can still be saved. Perhaps if you scooped out the burned bits and..."
"Nay, lass, the charred flavour will be all through the stew. 'Tis fine, though. I planned on pappins for the nooning meal, and there's still plenty of time for me to get some more stew going for the sup. Now, just you go sit down. I will no be a minute getting rid of this."
Jetta watched her walk off towards the stables. At least she thought she was headed to the stables. But the maid paused and tipped the heavy pot to dump its contents on the ground at the base of a tree next to the stables. Sighing, Jetta pushed the door closed and moved to sit at the table again and wait, as she'd been instructed. Jetta woke with a start and sat up sharply in bed, her eyes darting around for the source of the sound that had roused her from sleep. For a moment she was confused and befuddled, not recognizing the strange room she was in. Certainly it wasn't her bedchamber at Fitton. That room was much larger, the bed having a canopy and curtains you could use to close out light and sound. This room was... at the lodge, Jetta realized suddenly, her mind clearing as she swung her feet over the side of the bed and they landed on the pallet, still lying beside it. The pallet her husband usually slept on. Or had, she supposed, since he'd left for Buchanan and would not be sleeping there this night. She'd have the room all to herself, Jetta thought, and glanced around as the last of her confusion drifted away. She'd stayed below with Mavis while the woman cooked the papins, but once they'd eaten the delicious eggs in a rich sauce, Jetta had suddenly found herself exhausted. So much so she hadn't even argued when Mavis had suggested she have a little lie down and rest a bit. The woman had seen her up here and tucked her in, and that was the last thing Jetta recalled. She couldn't have slept too long, though, Jetta decided, as she noted the bright sunlight streaming through the open shutters at the window.
"He was poisoned, I tell you!"
Frowning at the shouted words from outside, Jetta pushed herself off the bed and moved to the window to peer out. Her eyes widened as she looked down at the half a dozen or so men gathered near the tree by the stables. They were standing around something lying at the base of the tree where Mavis had dumped the stew. All of them were now talking at the same time so that Jetta couldn't tell what was being said anymore.
"What the devil's going on?"
Jetta's gaze shifted quickly to a man who had just come out of the lodge. At first she was sure it was Ollie. His height, size, stride, even his voice were so similar to her husband's that she was sure it was him. But then she noted the grey streaks in the man's hair, and decided it must be the Uncle Acair that Ollie had assured them he'd sent out to stay with them while he was at Buchanan. She knew she was right when Mavis suddenly hurried out of the lodge and rushed toward the man, crying,
"What is it, Acair? What's amiss?"
Jetta's eyebrows widened slightly as she watched the maid. Mavis wasn't looking her usual self. Her clothes were a bit awry, her face flushed, and the way she was looking at and addressing Ollie's uncle was, well, frankly, it was far more like he was a beau than a lord. The way Acair was looking at Mavis told a story of its own, too. The two of them were obviously lovers, Jetta decided as Acair broke away from the men and moved to intercept Mavis. Taking her arm, he gently ushered her back toward the cottage, murmuring in her ear as he did and bringing a look of dismay to her face. Jetta watched until they disappeared inside again and then shifted her gaze back to the men by the tree. Several of them had moved away now, and she could see one was sitting on the ground, holding what appeared to be a dead dog in his lap. He was rocking it back and forth, his face full of sorrow. Frowning, Jetta started to withdraw from the window, intending to go below and find out what was going on. But then a splash of colour in the trees caught her eye. Pausing, she searched the woods beyond the stables and could have sworn she saw someone moving away through the woods. Someone in colourful clothing and moving swiftly. That was all she saw, though, before whoever it was moved completely out of sight. One of the men, Jetta told herself, perhaps looking for a spot to relieve himself or a place to bury the dog, she thought as she headed for the door. Although none of the other men were wearing bright colours, Jetta considered as she opened the door and stepped out onto the landing.
"Oh, lass, I was just coming to check on you. I was afraid all the fooferaw may have woken you."
Jetta paused and smiled with concern at Mavis as the older woman rushed toward her from the stairs.
"What happened?" "Oh, 'tis an awful thing. Young Robbie's dog was poisoned," she said unhappily, catching her arm and urging her back the way she'd come. "Pure thing. He was a good dog, too. All the lads liked him, but he ate that burned stew I threw out, and..."
She shook her head unhappily.
"There must have been some kind of poisonous plant at the base of the tree where I threw out the stew, and he ate some of it along with the stew. 'Tis the only thing I can think could have happened, but the poor beast is dead."
"Oh, no,"
Jetta said with dismay, despite having seen the dead dog. Somehow hearing what had happened was worse than seeing the dog lying in the man's lap. In truth, he'd looked as if he could have been sleeping when she'd seen him. But hearing about it, Well, she recalled how upset she'd been when her own dog, Jezebel, had died, and...
Aye, I'm afraid so. And I feel just awful about it. Had I tossed the stew somewhere else, or...
She shook her head.
Poor beast. He really was a good dog.
Deciding now was not the time to talk about her having another memory returned to her. Jetta merely nodded and allowed herself to be drawn back into the bedchamber. But this new memory reminded her that she'd had another memory when she'd first woken up. Of her bedroom back at... Damn, where had it been? She was sure a name had come to her as she'd thought of her bedchamber at home. Now all that remained was a vague idea of a curtained bed or something, and she couldn't recall the name that had come to her mind with the image. The memory had faded like the remnants of a dream from her mind.
Poor beast,
Mavis murmured again as she closed the door behind them.
Come along. The plaid you are wearing should be dry by now. Let's get it on you so you can go below. Akira's curious to speak with you, now that you're awake.
That was Uncle Akira I saw outside then,
Jetta asked, pleased that she'd guessed right.
Aye, he and the boys arrived just after you fell asleep. The Laird sent them to guard us until he can return.
Mavis explained as she felt the plaid she'd laid over a chair by the fire and, apparently finding it dry, retrieved it and laid it out on the floor to begin putting pleats into the material. Jetta crossed the room to join her.
Let me do that, Mavis. I need to learn how.
So there's still no news on a ship that sank?
Ollie asked with a frown. This was the first chance he'd got to ask his brother what he and Geordi had learned while out looking for news of the ship Jetta had been on. He hadn't felt right about asking Geordi when he'd gone to see him in the room where Rory was tending Katie. His brother had been so pale and upset over the maid, he'd let the matter go and asked Conran to follow him below to talk to him instead. This, however, was not the news he'd hoped to get from his brother, Ollie thought, as he watched Conran shake his head.
Nay, I did no learn anything more than Geordi and Alec did the first time. Neither did Geordi, he added and then explained. We met on the ride back and talked. We rode together the last part of the way until we encountered Katie.
Mouth tightening, he added.
I should ne'er have taken the lead. I should have ridden behind them to watch their backs. You could no have kenned that was going to happen,
Ollie said firmly.
And your being behind them probably would no have changed anything.
Mayhap,
Conran said unhappily, and then breathed out a sigh and said,
Anyway, neither Geordi nor I found even a whisper of news about a ship that sank in that storm 3 weeks ago. Well, almost 5 weeks now, he said grimly. It just did not happen.
Well, Jetta had to come from somewhere, Ollie growled with frustration.
Aye, Conran agreed and then asked, Ye sure it was the mast of a ship she was strapped to?
Aye, the crow's nest was mostly still intact and the sail still attached. It was definitely a mast, he assured him.
What the devil happened to the ship, then?
Conran was beginning to sound frustrated, too. Ollie scowled, but then stilled.
What? Conran asked at once. Have ye an idea?
Ollie was silent for a minute, considering the thought that had just popped into his head. Finally, he nodded.
I'm thinking mayhap the ship didn't sink. Conran raised his eyebrows at the suggestion.
So, 'twas not a mast you found her tied to?
Aye, it was, Ollie assured him.
Well then,
da,
told me once about a ship he travelled on, and a storm that came on so fast and rough the wind snapped the mast just below the crow's nest ere they could lower the sails. Conran considered that briefly. And you're thinking mayhap the same thing happened here, only much lower on the mast.
Aye, Ollie growled. The mast could have had a weakness at the base that snapped when the storm struck. Taking Jetta with it, Conran said slowly. But leaving the ship afloat.
Ollie finished, grimly.
We did hear mention of a ship or two taking damage in the storm and limping into one port or another for repairs.
Conran told him.
Had any lost their masts?
He asked sharply.
Conran shook his head. I dinna ken. I did not ask what kind of damage. We were looking for a boat we'd thought had sunk.
Ollie cursed.
We can ride out again and ask about ships with damage,
Conran offered.
Nay, you can't,
he said abruptly.
I need you here to sit with Geordie.
When Conran's eyebrows rose, Ollie frowned and considered the situation briefly. He hadn't yet had a chance to talk to the men who were on the wall when Katie took the arrow. By the time he got back to Buchanan, set Uncle Acaire back to the lodge with some men, and talked to Geordie, the men who had been on the wall had all finished their shift. But if they'd seen anything of import, they'd have told Acaire. So he didn't expect to learn much from them anyway. And he had men out searching the woods, but wasn't holding out much hope there either. As far as he could tell, his only hope of catching Katie's attacker was if they tried again to kill her.
To comfort Geordie, or protect Kate?
Conran asked finally, when Ollie remained lost in his thoughts. Ollie considered explaining his thinking, but in the end merely said,
Both. So ye do think Katie's attacker may try again?
Conran said with a frown.
Does Geordie know?
Nay. Ollie saw no reason to worry Geordie with this added issue. He was concerned enough about the lass.
I do not want him or anyone else to ken you're guarding them. That way, should Geordie leave the room to visit the guard's robe, Kate's attacker will think the way clear to make another attempt. How are we going to manage me guarding them without Geordie knowing?
Conran asked with a frown.
The passages, Ollie said. You'll ride out on a supposed chore for me, and take the passages back in. You can watch the room from there.
Ah, Conran said with sudden understanding.
That would be why you had Katie move to Sid's old room when you got back this morn. The guest chamber she was in could no be reached by the tunnels.
Aye.
What if Katie dies ere another attempt is made?
Conran asked.
Rory has no held out much hope of her recovering. Whoever shot the arrow at her may just be waiting to see if she dies from her injuries from the first attempt.
Ollie scowled over that. There was a good possibility that might happen. And then once the lass died, another attempt would be unnecessary, and they would never find out who had killed her. He didn't like that thought at all. Young Katie deserved justice.
I'll have Rory suggest she's improving, Ollie said,
thinking he'd have to have him say it in the great hall in front of a crowd of their people. He'd ask how the lass was, and Rory could say she was much stronger than expected and improving.
That should work,
Conran said with a nod.
Whoever shot her with the arrow is more likely to make a second attempt if they think she is getting better.
Conran picked up his ale and took a long swallow. Setting his drink down then, he nodded again and said,
Very well. I'll head out right away.
Ollie shook his head.
"'Tis nearly the sup. You'd never set out on a journey this late in the day. You can set out in the morn."
Conran frowned and shook his head. I dinna like the idea of leaving Geordi and Katie unprotected all night. I'll say I'm retiring early to rest up for my trip tomorrow, and then slip into the passage from my room tonight. Then I'll ride out in the morn and slip back through the passages to continue watching the room. Ollie shook his head at once. Conran couldn't watch all night and tomorrow too. I'll watch the room tonight, so you can rest up and watch tomorrow. Truly? Conran asked with surprise. Ollie arched his eyebrows. You need not sound so surprised. I do things around here too. Well, I usually, he agreed. But this'll leave you missing out on rest, for I ken you'll no be left to sleep the morn away tomorrow. Half the population of Buchanan seems ready to pester you with complaints now you're back after having been away this past month. Aye, Ollie said dryly. It was part of the reason it had taken him so long to get his uncle off on his way to the lodge and then to get up to see Geordi. He'd been constantly stopped by people with one problem or another he needed to sort out for them. In fact, Ollie was rather amazed he'd managed to have this conversation with Conran without interruption. As if he'd jinxed himself with the thought, the keep doors opened and the stablemaster entered, looked around, spotted him at the table and hurried toward them. "Dinna worry about me and sleep," Ollie said finally as he got to his feet. "I had 4 weeks of little but sleep. I'll survive a night or two without." Leaving Conran at the table, he walked to meet the stablemaster and see what was wrong. Chapter 7 Ollie was in a deep slumber when a soft knock at the door stirred him. Blinking sleepily, he glanced toward the window to see the weak early morning light seeping through. The sun wasn't even fully up, he noted with a frown, and sat up in the bed, finding it odd to be in one after nearly 5 weeks on the pallet on the floor that he'd been calling bed since Jetta's arrival in his life. Actually, he recalled suddenly, he hadn't really slept in this one, at least not for long. Conran had only relieved him from watching Geordi and Katie moments ago, from what he could tell. By his guess, he'd got perhaps 10 minutes of sleep. Groaning at the thought, Ollie climbed from the bed and crossed the room in his bedshirt, thinking Jetta would probably tease him, did she see him in it. He followed the thought with a shake of his head meant to remove the thoughts of his wee counterfeit wife. Ollie had been doing his best not to think of Jetta since leaving the lodge, but that was something he was finding ridiculously hard to do. From the moment he'd ridden away from the lodge, everything had seemed to remind him of her. His horse's tail, he'd noted, was the same jet black as her hair. The grass under the bright sunlight was the same sparkling green as her eyes. The fluffy white clouds filling the sky overhead after the storm had made him think of her porcelain skin. And that had just been during the first few minutes of his journey back. It had continued all the way here, and still continued. When he'd had Rory take him to see Katie on his arrival here, the dark-haired maid lying pale and still in the bed had reminded Ollie of Jetta when she'd still been unconscious. The maid was petite like her, and had the same dark hair as well. Knowing she probably didn't look all that much like Jetta, and that it was just his infatuated mind seeing Jetta everywhere, Ollie had then gone below to talk to his uncle and find out what they'd learned about the attack. Servants had immediately brought pastries for him to break his fast with, and he'd thought that, as nice as Mavis's pastries had been, cooks were better, and he should take some back for Jetta when he returned. Truly, he did not seem to be able to have a single thought enter his head without it somehow leading to thoughts of Jetta. That realization had led Ollie to acknowledge that he was never going to break this attraction he had for her. Knowing that, He'd also quite plainly seen his future. Jetta would somehow find out they were not married and leave him, and he would be a broken man. It was that simple. Ollie had thought he was broken after the injury he took and Adira's leaving him.